Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. Hello, beautiful soul. Welcome to another broadcast. Today, we are talking about what it means to keep secrets. What does it mean to your brain? What happens to your body if you're locked away in shame? Today, I am joined by my friend, by my colleague, the wonderful Dr. Jill Stocker. She's going to be sharing a little bit of her journey in this process of opening up, being honest, and being vulnerable. And we're going to explain why it's such a critical part of your journey as well, or could be. We have this rule at Make Your Mark Global that we don't want our special guests or speakers to try things out on stage that they haven't actually fully healed. I mean, sharing your story. So yes, I shared my story very vulnerably on that TEDx stage, but I would never do that if I hadn't healed it. I have seen it backfire. I have seen people go into a total meltdown when their inner child felt completely exposed. So just know that whatever we are sharing today, we have the permission of everyone involved, and we have sufficiently healed. Okay, so that's enough of my disclaimer. Please type in the chat where you are viewing from, and if you're watching the replay, you are welcome as well. Just type in the chat, hashtag replay. So my guest probably needs no introduction, but in case you don't know her, she is a contributing author to Time to Rise and the Top 10 Traits of Highly Resilient People. She is a very resilient doctor. Her name is Dr. Jill Stocker, and she is a specialist in hormone optimization and age management medicine. My dear friend, Dr. Juicy Jill. Welcome. Thank you for joining me again.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Well, it's always good for us to connect and share. I see that we've got some folks in the United States, Azerbaijan, Hungary, Vegas. Thank you all for tuning in. We've got some people who want to hear about this topic. I'm grateful to have you. So Jill, why don't we kind of start at the beginning? I've told people, and you've told people publicly, that we met because I was live on Facebook. What was it that made you shout out and type into the chat when I was going live?
I remember it like it was yesterday, like 4 years ago, and our time difference was pretty big. So it was first thing in the morning, just waking up, having my coffee, and you pop up on the screen. And you were sharing about your journey with depression, and you actually were a little bit teary. You were on the terrace in France, in the south of France, and I just was in awe of your vulnerability. And as a physician, I had never seen a physician talk about their own journey, and then so vulnerably. I grew up kind of shut down with feelings, and I thought crying was, you know, weak, or I needed to be strong. That was kind of the message that I got. Now, whether that was handed down to me or just something that I thought had to be, I don't know. But I just thought, wow, she's so brave and so powerful. I never once thought that you were weak by sharing that. I thought you were incredibly courageous. And it just really struck me. So I was, you know, typing in the chat, and then I think you gave me a shout out, and I was like, oh my God. So it was, you know, from there, and it's been quite the journey from 4 years ago, from where I couldn't really talk at all, to now I share, you know, on stages and on platforms like this with, you know, thousands, millions of people. And even shared it, you know, multiple times. And I'm sure you had shared part of that story before. Like, I was that one person that tuned in at that particular moment, you know, when you were sharing it in, you know, however many times you've shared it. And it's really made such a difference for me. So that was the message that, you know, that I've come to learn is, I may share the same story, but I'm hitting a different audience, and it may be that one person that it needed to hear that day. So
yeah,
I am forever grateful for you sharing vulnerably and openly.
So am I, because it brought us together. And since then we have traveled, we have collaborated, and now we're cooking up some other magic that we can share about. But before we get into our, you know, powerful present and our ambitious future, like, what was really going on? Because when we met in 2017, it was all online. You joined one of my virtual programs, and then you came to France for the Roots of Purpose retreat. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, all of the participants were kind of sharing what was going on for them, why they came to the retreat, and you were kind of silent. Tell me about that.
You are correct. That is very accurate. And even on our Zoom calls, I would get nervous to even speak in front of anybody. And, you know, as far as what was going on for me, I had had my hormonal awakening where I, found this particular specialty. I was practicing traditional family medicine, and I didn't even realize I was having symptoms of hormonal decline. And once I had that hormonal awakening, I wanted more from life. And I wanted more for my patients. And I really started following that path. And it was kind of the beginning of my divergence from traditional medicine, traditional life, to following my heart, finding my heart, finding my own self at 40 something, you know, because my life had been so programmed up until then. You know, there was never really a thought of like, who am I or what do I want? I just knew I always wanted to help people. I wanted to be a doctor, and that's what I did. And then the next thing and the next thing. And I was juggling a very full practice. I had over 4,000 patients, and transitioned, this practice in LA, where I was trying to make a name for myself, almost like building a new practice. And it was a very different field. There was a lot of quiet time. I happened to make that transition, and then it got really quiet. And I had to really think, is this really what I want to do? My light just went off. I'm so sorry.
It's all good.
Here we are. and, you know, I was trying to find my purpose in life. I knew I loved this practice, but I didn't exactly know what it looked like from there. And that's when I saw you sharing your story. And then we started working, you know, you were doing something online, and I thought, I need to do this. I don't know what I'm going to be talking about, but I need to do this. I had this like rumbling inside. And so I followed that. And the same thing happened for Roots of Purpose, meeting up with everybody there. You know, I grew up with a family that didn't really talk about feelings. Things would happen within, like, you know, the family or friends or whatever, and we just never really talked about it. And I think that's what was handed down to my parents from their parents. My dad hadn't said I love you until he was like in his 80s and dying. And so I just wasn't ever exposed to radical vulnerability. And sometimes it's not even radical. I just, you know, because I'd never seen it, it was radical to me. And, you know, just backtrack to my first experience with meditation was in Santa Monica. I went to a women's sharing group and we did a meditation, and then everybody started sharing what was coming up for them. And I remember like just being completely overwhelmed by everybody sharing so vulnerably. Like I'd never seen that before. And I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. So it's kind of the same experience as, you know, when we were in the south of France and everybody was sharing their story and they just owned it. There was no, they had no shame. They just were so radically vulnerable and honest, and it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. And I felt guilty that I wasn't sharing mine because I didn't really know how. And as you remember, the only way that I could start sharing was by writing my story, and I had to read it to you guys. And once I started reading, I would sink into my heart, into my body, and then I could kind of look people in the eye and share with them certain things, because I had, you know, I had some shame around some personal things that had gone on that people hadn't really, I'd really shared before. It's kind of like when you go through having a child. Your friends, if they don't have children, they don't really understand what you're going through. It was similar things. I didn't have friends that were going through life shifts that I was moving through. So I just shut it down and kept moving forward. And you guys were just like so accepting and loving. And it was like you just looked at me like, okay, you know, there was no judgment with my story. And it's actually like helped people by sharing that. So like little by little, I would start sharing little things. And that was right at the time when I was doing that first book, Time to Rise, with you, and really diving into, you know, why I do what I do, my life history. And that's actually, in writing that, I realized, you know, some of the events in my growing up that had led up to me wanting to do what I do. So it helped me get clear on why I want to do what I do. And I can share about that now if you want. I've
well,
been
before
forever now, people will never believe that I never never talked.
Oh, that's why I love doing these interviews with you. I'm like, no, y'all, for real. When we first started, she literally wouldn't talk. She would just read. But you've brought up a few things that are like really, really important. And it is true that when we can share in a safe space and we can witness someone else owning their truth. I mean, at first you maybe are not owning it. You're just sharing it very vulnerably, maybe with some fear, but then being able to really own it, because what is reflected back to you is compassion, is understanding, is empathy, because so many of us have gone through the same things. And so I want to touch back on something that you said about growing up in your family. You didn't always talk about emotions. And in my family, like, it was just a thing that, like, if you had a bad emotion, it was like, go and deal with that on your own, you know? And so what I'm curious to know how you have been able to come to terms with some of the family stuff. Because if we look at statistics, I mean, more than 50% of families in America are considered dysfunctional. And I'm one of the people that didn't know I was in a dysfunctional family until I started having these conversations. I attended the adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families, and I started to hear stuff that I'm like, oh, yeah, that happened in my family, but we either just swept it under the rug or it somehow it became normalized. And so this idea of growing up in a family where you don't talk about your emotions, or you don't tell the family secrets, you don't air your dirty laundry, there is a period of time where you're kind of coming out of either denial or secrecy. So how was that for you to, I mean, you just jumped right in, like in a book. And then you met us in D.C. where we presented on stage together. So,
I mean, it's really been a journey for me, and something that just kind of like came up is, there's a saying, we're only as sick as our secrets. And I obviously, like, I had a couple different things that I tools that I used to cope with things, and I started kind of coming out on my own by sharing. But then I also, I had help, and I'm very clear about this with the people that I work with, because I feel like I owe my life to different programs. I think a lot of people out there think that there's only, only programs for, like, for alcoholics or addicts. Everybody knows about AA, but there are, as you mentioned, there are programs like adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families. And that for me has been pivotal in my inner work. And I didn't grow up with alcoholic parents, but there was definitely, as you mentioned, there was a lot of dysfunction in our family that just would get swept under the rug, and we just move forward. We don't talk about it. And so that's all I knew. And I knew a lot of my stories, or my, like, my traumas, because we all have traumas. It doesn't have to be a car accident. It's different, various things. And I just knew my stories as stories. I had, like, a big shut off button, because that's how I had learned to survive and thrive, was to shut any of those feelings down and to just move forward. And so I remember sharing about some of the stories just kind of matter-of-factly in, a couple meetings. And it was in what you said, the other people's reaction, the looks on their faces was like of horror. And it wasn't until then that I realized, oh my gosh, like, I guess I suffered trauma. And I'm not trying to be in victim mode or anything like that, but I think unless we actually, like, can acknowledge what has happened, or, the events that have shaped us to be who we are, we get stuck in that, and it affects every relationship too. My relationship with my parents has changed. My relationship with my kids has changed. The way I parent has changed, because I had to first become my own loving parent and realize, why Jill was the way she was. And that's actually, like, I started doing that work via, meditation workshops and things like that. So I started getting some of that information from there. I could see different events. And then adding program in there was just more people sharing similar stories, so I didn't feel so terminally unique, as we say. And I think when you can own your story, when you can, and release any shame, because I think the loudest voice in my head is my head, or is my voice. And once I realized that, some of the things, I just have had massive compassion for myself for, we do what we can, what we know until we know better, and then when we know better, we do better. And if I get a feeling that I want that something personal is going to actually help, like a patient of mine, helping to relate that connection, I will share it. I don't always share. I definitely didn't share at all with patients before, because I was taught in medical school we have, like, that barrier. And the first time I ever did share, my experience with, like, my hormonal awakening, the patient looked at me, like, wide-eyed and said, "Oh my gosh, I felt so alone." And so, now I will share different aspects. I just spoke with somebody today, and it's somebody who is where I was 5 years ago, where I wasn't sure what my life purpose was. And I just knew that the status quo was not making me happy anymore. And so I shared about me. I said, I've been there too. And these are the things, these are the tools that I used. I don't know what that looks like for you because we're all different. And that, I mean, she was like, wow, I feel so much better. Just that connection and relating and relating our stories in childhood of and validating what happened to us. I think like taking ownership, validating, and then moving forward and incorporating that is really, really pivotal.
Absolutely. I agree 1,000,000%. One of the things that was really shocking to me was when I first started to read about the impact that just getting things out first on paper before you even share it with anyone. So narrative therapy is what it's called, you know, the great work of James Pennebaker, you know, over the last 20 plus years. Studies have actually shown that not only do you feel better, but there are biomarkers. We could draw your blood and see that the inflammatory markers and stress hormones and your blood pressure all comes down just through journaling. That's why life writing is a part of all of my programs. And then being able to share, and like you just said, Jill, being witnessed, being believed. For so many of us, if we did grow up in a family where they said, oh, that didn't happen, or you were too little to remember that, or, well, you had it coming, which is what I heard. When we get invalidated and basically gaslit as children, we stop trusting our own intuition, we stop believing in ourselves, and you said that you had, you know, one voice in your head. I had way more voices. You know, I didn't have just one inner critic. I had a whole Supreme Court of inner critics and all these different voices telling me how bad I was, how wrong I was, and, you know, all of these things. What I found super interesting recently is seeing that there's actual data from a neuroscience perspective that when people divulge a secret, it changes brain function. And so I've always known that when you're holding onto a secret or you've told a lie and you're trying to hide it, it uses up so much of your vitality and your energy just to keep that suppressed. And when we unburden ourselves, of course, in a safe space with people you can trust, it liberates this energy that allows us to heal and thrive. And so, you know me, you know I'm a neuroscience nerd, so this idea that we can actually impact our brain function by finally being honest and, yeah, and sharing our truth and owning our truth. So what's new in your realm now that, you know, in 2017 you kind of came out, you came to the south of France, and then you came to our program in London, Speak from the Heart, and got on stage in a pink suit. and it just keeps, I mean, every year you're like topping it and topping it. And I love that you're now educating other physicians about some of these things, about the hormonal awakening and being misdiagnosed. So what's new for you? Yeah. What's coming next?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And everything that you just spoke about as far as like how it physically impacts you. You know, one of the stages that we shared was also in the south of France was with Bruce Cryer and his heart math. And, you know, people, if you look at those studies, and I, you know, was a guinea pig and I went up there and I got to experience it hands-on, is when you have any negative thoughts or upsetting thoughts, you actually release all of these like toxic chemicals that cause inflammation and cause us to, you know, end up having all these other diseases, depression, cancer, heart disease, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, versus when you're in a space of joy or gratitude. It actually helps to lower your heart rate variability so that you don't have all of those inflammatory things. And that works with, you know, healing your shame or, you know, owning your story. Because if you've not come to terms with your story, you know, and who you are, and there's always going to be layers of the onion that come, you know, that happen. I'm still uncovering things. I think that's going to be a lifelong journey is self-discovery or self-study. But when you finally have like actually healed that part of you, that story, when I look at it now, doesn't create the same reaction.
Mm.
It creates almost like an indifference. So there's not that, you know, release of bad chemicals. So when we're talking, you know, I'm a nerd too. So
yes, I know.
and actually, like most people don't know, but my degree is in molecular and cellular biology.
And super nerd in the house.
Dr. Bruce Lipton is, you know, he's a molecular and cellular biologist, wrote The Biology of Belief, and how we can actually like change our cells, our cellular function through our thoughts. And that has to do with healing trauma, healing, you know, dysfunction, or acknowledging it. I think what you said is acknowledging it and just owning that story and then being able to share about it without any, you know, judgment, self-judgment. So that's my nerd out is on the heart math thing. It's definitely very helpful. And, you know, as far as helping change the system, you know, I did a couple years ago, I got on the stage and talked with my medical group, AMMG, and I went up there and I was terrified. It was like facing my biggest fear head on was going up on a stage and being asked a question that I didn't know the answer to. And I was, you know, someone said early on, you know, you can't fail at being you, you know, just be you, just share your story. And so I went up there and I shared all of my accolades, all of my degrees. And then I took my shoes off, my stilettos off, so that I could ground myself. And I said, and now I'm going to tell you about me. And I told them about my journey through being misdiagnosed with depression when I was in medical school, something that was clearly hormonal, PMS, was treated with an antidepressant. And I just needed to function. And I didn't, you know, question it because I didn't grow up questioning the medical system. And so I took it and it worked because I needed to function until it didn't, and then, you know, changed. And it wasn't until I found this field that I realized like that was never the problem. It was actually a hormone imbalance. I didn't need antidepressants. And I became that doctor that then perpetuated that. And I treated my patients with the same until I knew better. And once I, you know, got into hormone and age management, it really changed the way that I treated people, because the same symptoms that are used to diagnose somebody with depression, bipolar, anxiety, are the same symptoms of hormonal decline. And so I shared that story with 400 physicians and said, you know, we need to change. The system needs to change. We need to actually listen to our patients, because the average doctor interrupts at 11 seconds. And, you know, I shared and then it came to an end, and 40% of physicians end up in burnout.
Yeah.
And one physician per day commits suicide. Because they're holding it in. I was holding it in. You were holding it in until like you break free.
Yeah.
And it came to the end. You know, it was like my moment of reckoning for questions. Mm-hmm. And there were no questions. There were no questions. I walked off the stage and I walked out of the room and I had these men follow me, like older men and practitioners, doctors. And they were like, thank you. Thank you. I needed to hear that. And then they shared their story.
Wow.
And for me, like I did my job. If I like had even two physicians that are now going to listen to their patients. So I, you know, as far as like what else is new, I want to help spread more awareness to even more people. And I want patients to be able to advocate for themselves. If you go to the doctor and they're not listening to you, or you can't relate, you don't have a connection. It's just like any other relationship. You can find a different doctor that's going to listen to you. So you're not stuck with, you know, that one physician that you go to.
Absolutely. Well, I love that our friend Margareta just wrote in that so many women need to hear this, and which Which is so true, and that's why we're here. That's why I'm no longer hiding what I'm going through. There is definitely some controversy amongst physicians and therapists about self-disclosure. It's not for everyone. I'm not saying that all the people who come through my speaker training or my branding academy, y'all don't all need to go and tell your business. But for some of us, it is really helpful. And I think it's a calling. You know, when you, like Jill said, she felt this rumbling, she felt called, she didn't know what she was going to end up sharing. It has morphed and changed over these years. But what you're doing is making a difference. And I love that Kristen, who met us at Omega when we were there, has written in that our openness and guidance has stayed with her.
Yeah.
Gratitude. And that's why we do it.
And I'm so glad that Margaretha chimed in, because that is something that we were going to talk about at some point too.
Exactly. Birth trauma.
It's not just like the trauma of like growing up. It's like everything we go through shapes us. And I feel like every time I've had a challenge, when I share it with somebody, it's actually, I was given those challenges or opportunities to learn from it so that I can share with others. And that was something I realized a couple years ago. I didn't even realize how much birth trauma I was holding in my body and how much that affected just how I presented to the world, and how I felt in my body, you know. And one of the things that I've really, you know, gotten into is the divine feminine, divine masculine. We all have both of them in us. And a lot of that was, you know, in releasing that birth trauma and realizing the family dynamics that I grew up in, very like masculine energy, masculine women who were just, and not that masculine is bad, it's just there wasn't a lot of like feminine modeling there. So I almost shut that part of me down. And that's something that happened with the birth of my children. Even being a physician, having delivered babies myself, having been in there, it can be, and the majority of times it is, such like a sterile procedure, something that is like natural, like we're actually interfering with it, you know. I mean, like women have been having babies for like centuries without the help of doctors.
Exactly. And women are still doing that, you know, whether that's at home or in a birthing center or out in the jungle. I mean, I'm not saying that we all have to, you know, be working out in the fields. And literally, you know, when I first experienced hypnobirthing, I know you know this story, I was learning about hypnobirthing when I was pregnant with my daughter. And I found that you could actually go through labor and delivery without the epidural, without the screaming and yelling. And then reading and going to this class and reading all the material, we're hearing about these stories of, okay, it was mainly women in Africa who, they don't take the same kind of maternity leave that we do. They would literally be out in the fields, water breaks, it's time to deliver, they squat, deliver the baby, strap it on, and keep moving. Now, I know that that's, obviously it's a cultural thing. If you've witnessed that and seen that, the cultural impression makes a big difference. If we are brought up to think that giving birth means, you know, screaming and yelling and telling your husband that he's the cause of all of this or whatever, then that is the experience you're going to perpetuate. But I want to just dig a little bit deeper, and I know I would love to have you and Margaretha. She is a hypnobirthing doula in Italy. She's from Holland. And you both have had these experiences. I'd love to have you on and have a panel discussion about birth trauma. But first and foremost, I want you to kind of explain exactly what you mean. It wasn't just like, oh, I had a painful delivery. Because if you hear the word trauma in a medical setting, most people think, oh, did you have a tear? Did they need to get the baby out really fast? You're talking about the personal trauma that you experienced and how that has lingered. And then I can't wait for you to tell people, if it's appropriate, how you got healing for the womb. But, you know, again, I leave it to you to decide, but tell me, what do you mean for yourself? What do you mean that you experienced birth trauma?
Yeah, well, it's something that I didn't identify at the moment that it happened. It wasn't until years later, and literally not until just 2 years ago that I was able to see it. But I could feel that I was somewhat disconnected after having children. I felt somewhat disconnected from my femininity and from like my sexual desire. I just felt a disconnect there, and I couldn't quite explain it. And obviously things changed physically and everything. But it was through a couple years ago, through a journey with psychedelic medicine, with plant medicine, I felt the calling to participate in ayahuasca. And I went for clarity in my purpose. And as they say with plant medicine, you get what you need. You don't necessarily get what you want, you get what you need. And that's exactly what I got, is I got this massive awakening to why I was so shut down in, you know, my pelvic region. I literally could feel like my butt clenched together, like it was protecting something. And when I would sit cross-legged, like I couldn't, my knees were like up because I was so tight. And so I had this awareness that something was going on, but I had no idea like how to work through it. And that's where the plant medicine for me came in. And I could see very clearly that when I had had my children, my first one was an emergency C-section. And so, you know, even though I'm a doctor and I've been through the whole thing, it's very different when you're on the other side of it. And, you know, you go in there, they flop you over, put your epidural in, and then they start cutting you open. And you're just like, there's a whole sheet there. And I didn't actually even get to see my baby. They just took her away. And for hours, I was alone in my room afterwards, after they sewed me up. And it wasn't until a couple hours later that they wheeled her in. And I just remember feeling the disconnect of like, oh, is that my baby? You know, like I was completely cut out of that whole process. It was definitely like a very sterile, it was traumatic because it was emergency. And you know, fast forward to my nan, that one, I had complications in the C-section as well. I saw this much of him before they took him away. And the same thing happened. They put me away in a little room by myself and for hours. And it was like, did I have a baby? Like there was such a radical disconnect of like, you know, surgically just cutting your babies out of you, removing you. And then, you know, I understand needing to make sure that the baby's okay and all that kind of stuff, but there is that bonding and also just this radical sterilization of your femininity and your feminine organs. And then my last one was a planned C-section since the previous ones. And I was so grateful because it was at a hospital that they really tried to mimic a vaginal birth. And I begged the anesthesiologist, because they put a drape over you, so you're literally just laying there, you know. And I'm like, please, can I please see my baby? Like, I just wanted to see my baby. Mm-hmm. And he lowered the drape, and I watched them pull him out of me. Aww. And it was like, and then they put him right on me, and which was like amazing. But it was through that ceremony just a couple years ago that I saw how that was just such so traumatic. And I never talked about it. And I actually never cried about it. Like, I never cried. I just was so shut down from it. And that was that massive disconnect. And once I could see that, like, I just, you know, I could release it. And it was almost like during that ceremony, for me, you know, sometimes people in ceremony will vomit, and that's their way of purging. But for me, it felt like I was giving birth again. And it just was such a radical awakening that has continued through other journeys. And, but that was the first shift. Mm. And that was more shift into, like, I felt more in my feminine body, and like everything had relaxed. So when I crossed my legs, like my knees were down, and so it wasn't like I was holding on to this. I was able to release that trauma, and then reconnect. And that feminine power, you know, it's not, you don't have to be a mom to actually have, you know, womb trauma or feminine. Like, so much of our energy and our power is there and in our connection there. And it's something that, you know, I didn't know that I was going to be sharing that publicly. Like, at first, I did see, like, oh, this is something huge. I'm sure that a ton of women go through this. And even just a couple weeks ago, I had a patient share her birth trauma. And had I not gone through that own awakening of my own, I would not have been able to hold as much space for her that she needed to have that. And even just sharing that birth trauma, again, just sharing, connecting, it releases so much of that shame. And I do remember also, like, feeling ashamed that I had to have a C-section. You know, when people are like, oh, I had a normal birth. I had it, like, the normal way. So.
Yeah. I love what you're saying. And yes, Margareta, I think that it wasn't just the C-section that was the trauma. It was the disconnection from baby, from not being able to, like, be a participant in that. And so I would love to have the two of you talk about that. And I see that Beryl, who's also doing hypnosis or hypnotherapy or hypnobirthing, Beryl also says that they have taken people back in utero and done healing on the trauma that was downloaded from parents. And I definitely believe that that is where a lot of our treatment is going, you know, whether that's with psychedelics or it's with psychodrama or with sacred ceremonies and plant medicine. We can work on these traumas that are passed down through the generations, both in our parental bloodline, but also the collective trauma, which is so, so huge, as Jill and I are on this path. For those of you that think you might like to experience, what am I going to say next? For those of you who might like to experience the freedom of unburdening yourself, I do have a free program on life writing. There's one for overcoming victim mentality and one for becoming the hero of your life that includes the life writing prompts and guided meditations that really help you get into the subconscious in a safe way on your own. Or you can join me this winter. I'm doing a full year of live coaching with a small group for my hero course. So that will include the small group sharing as well as all of the life writing, which is really, really powerful therapy. But if you also think you might like to travel, you've seen that some people have seen us in different countries, Denmark, France, Iceland, America. Well, in 2022, we are going to be opening it up for this audience to help me plan a trip. So I have a survey link that you can fill out. What amazing destination might you like to explore? I'm partnering up with Trova Trip, where we can do experiential workshop stuff as well as touristy stuff. So I'm voting for Bali, you know, that's one of the things on my list. But if those of you who think, wow, wouldn't that be cool to go meet up with Dr. Andrea and Dr. Jill on one of these retreats, well, you might just have your wish come true. So, Jill, we are both also exploring, not only participating in sacred ceremonies, like we are going off to Rhythmia Life Advancement Center in Costa Rica this winter for our birthdays in November. So we get to enjoy experiencing a sacred plant ceremony again, but we're also embarking on a path of study to facilitate psychedelic assisted therapy. Do you want to say anything about that, or shall we move to the next topic?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I never have dreamed of in a million years,
Yeah.
and I'm so excited about it because I have had such, huge personal transformations through my journeys, our journeys, and some people go for healing or to heal an addiction, and so sometimes there's not just one reason for psychedelic medicine. It can be for treatment of depression, anxiety, healing trauma, and sometimes it's for clarity. And I always, tell people, like, you have to have a calling for it. You have to have like some type of internal draw for it, or wanting a little bit more. And that's kind of where I found myself doing it. And then since ayahuasca, having other journeys with psilocybin, and they're very different. And I again had yet another awakening during that, a Kundalini awakening. It was very amazing, and definitely connected even more with my root. And then since then, it seems like everything's unfolding. And so, since then, I have felt that rumbling to be able to incorporate that into my own practice, because the people that I work with are wanting more. They're not just, because they want to lose 2 pounds. Like, they're wanting a radical life transformation, and I want that for them as well.
Which makes sense because you're working with these high net worth individuals who have made their money, they've done good in the world, and now they're kind of like they want to optimize even more. And unburdening from the trauma is part of that, and finding that next level, or that next chapter. But we should say that, Jill and I are physicians in America, and in the United States of America right now, there's only ketamine that is legal for facilitating or helping people with depression. That is what it's FDA approved for. Ketamine happens to be a very safe anesthetic that's even used in children. But there is wonderful research being done by some researchers all over the world, but in the United States in particular, there are FDA clinical trials being done using psilocybin and using MDMA to help people with things like PTSD, to help people with end of life, that fear of death. So there will be, in the next couple of years, the opportunity for other psychedelic assisted therapies, but I'm just saying right now that's all that is legal in the United States. I live in France, so in Holland, people can do ketamine, they can also do truffles or magic mushrooms. But it's also important to note that you don't want to be doing this on your own. You don't want to be doing this at a rave or at a party. This is something that, in my opinion, should be done in a safe setting. And whether that is a clinical setting with doctors and therapists who've been trained to facilitate, or you're doing it with an indigenous shaman where you are looked after and they have their own protocols, that's the first thing. I mean, you can do all sorts of research. You'll hear that set and setting are like the principal things that we think of, but it's also, we're physicians, so we're going to be responsible. You also have to have a medical clearance before you do these things. Generally, psychedelics are safe, they're non-addictive, but there are some risks and contraindications. So I just want to put it out there. We're not saying everybody should sign up to do psychedelics. But it is showing to be really promising in helping people with addiction, with complex PTSD and spiritual growth overall. So
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. So I am actually embarking on my journey with training in ketamine therapy at the end of next month.
awesome.
And I have patients that have already participated with a colleague and have had like amazing results. And the reason that I feel called to do that is I you know, get very, there's definitely a huge energetic exchange with my patients as part of like why I'm good at what I do. And I will pick up on a lot of things. And I know the people to connect them with that are doing, you know, whether it's energy healing or if they need more. But I was feeling like, I know what they need and I want to be able to give that to them. And this is one of the ways that I'm so excited about learning and being able to offer to people to have that experience, you know, that I've gone through that has been just so pivotal and life changing. So, and I'm excited to share that with the world.
Yeah, well, I think it's cool. I listened to the podcast, the Field Tripping podcast with Michael Dow, a very good friend of mine that you know as well. And Michael has been doing facilitating ketamine journeys for people at the Field Trip office in California. Field Trip is also now in Holland. They have a facility. So I'm excited because I'm embarking on a longer journey of training for facilitating therapies with MDMA, psilocybin, and ketamine. So yeah, I'm just at the very beginning of the journey, but already feeling like the people that I help now, the people that I'm helping process trauma using meditation with deep witnessing and presencing and the life writing, I mean, it's been remarkable, the results that people are getting. People who come through my academy who want to do speaking, like it's a spiritual process, wouldn't you say, Jill? It's not like I'm just training you to speak, you know, with all the technical skills, but it's a process of owning your truth and finding your voice and then sharing that in the most vulnerable and authentic way. So I think that for the people that it's a good fit, this will be an additional way that I can help people heal their trauma.
Absolutely. I highly recommend all of her academies, everybody. I would not be on here speaking with you. It has helped me process, you know, I didn't come all whole and complete and everything all processed when I met her. That a lot of that has unfolded, you know, in co-authoring the books and really, you know, researching myself. like I said, self-study is very important and just kind of seeing why I do what I do. And that can change too. Yeah. I have definitely shifted in the several years that we've worked together. And, you know, it's kind of like we get to try on different shoes or different outfits. Like this shoe is not going to have to fit me for the rest of my life. And
exactly.
I may decide that I want to wear a different shoe next year because I'm uncovering different parts of me and becoming like more and more like that true me and discovering like who you truly are and what brings you joy, because we do what we do because we love what we do. Not, you know, I want to help people, but I love it too. Like we get to actually like help people and enjoy ourselves at the same time, which I think is like an amazing, you know, thing to be able to do.
Yeah. It's a gift. Mm-hmm. It's a gift to be able to surrender to the divine and be of service to other people. So my friends, I have been sharing, on the screen, how you can follow Dr. Jill on Instagram or on her website. She also has a training on, why don't you tell us about that training? About reclaiming your juiciness.
Yes, I have something. It's going to be launching in the next couple of days. You'll see it if you check Instagram and different social media that's on here, but it is going to be the 5 simple steps to reclaim your juiciness in 24 hours or less. And it is proven to be effective. And I actually do it myself, like usually once a year. I did this a little bit ago, and it's taken me a little bit to release it for various reasons. But it's ready to be launched. I think you guys will be surprised. Everybody gets that little like, you know, smile, smirk when you hear juiciness, but like everybody deserves to feel that like inner vitality. So
yes, and I am so grateful for you helping me reclaim my juiciness. You've been working with me to optimize my hormones as I enter into this next phase of life, and I have never felt more vital and alive, My cognitive function is sharp. I'm cranking out products and books like amazing for me. For me, it's amazing because I always tell people, I was feeling pretty good before you optimized my hormones. But you very classically said, well, I don't want you to just feel good. I want you to be amazing. And I can honestly say that thanks to you and your expert help, I'm doing it. I'm living it. I'm loving it.
Yay. Good.
All right, my friends. Well, it has been a pleasure to connect with you. Has this been interesting to hear about the healing power of divulging in a safe, sacred space what you have been maybe in denial about or hiding? I hope that this has been helpful. I am forever grateful to you, Jill, for showing up, for trusting me, and for sharing so vulnerably with this community, because I know that it is helping people. Thank you.
Thank you for helping me too. Coaxing me gently, sometimes shoving me out on stage, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, if you'd also like to experience my speaker circle or Speak from the Heart, stay tuned because it starts in mid-September. That's right. I will be training you online virtually and then helping you prepare to submit your pitch for a TED Talk or a keynote. Things are happening. Even if certain countries are not holding live events, me and some of my clients have been getting virtual keynote gigs. So this is the absolute perfect time to bring that message out so you can join the speaker circle starting soon. All right. Well, that is it for me. I am very, very grateful that we've had this time together, and I look forward to seeing you very, very soon in person. I will see Jill in a couple of months. The rest of you, where will I see you? I don't know, but when this video is done, I will post the link for my Trova Trip survey where you can help me plan the next excursion so you can maybe meet me and Jill in what country? Bali. I want Bali. Safe, not all the crazy corona restrictions. It's not too expensive. Wouldn't it be wonderful? All right, well, I will hear from you in the survey very, very soon. Many blessings, my friends. Take good care. Bye. To the Innate Vitality Code podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, rate the podcast, and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series. Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.